we're
this
here.
Live?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the podcast?
This is it.
This is the podcast?
I feel like we might as well include them in our struggle won't tweet at us about the audio quality.
This is Yo, Is This Racist? The podcast that... Oh, man, we answer your racism questions.
Yep, with the help of a special guest or guests.
My name is Andrew T.
I'm Tawny Newsome.
I'm sitting on the floor. We are recording from Tawny's literally secret compound.
Cult is cult the word we want. We prefer to call it a cult.
In the desert. I came out here to help with some hard labor.
Yeah, we did some straight up chain gang shit.
We moved rocks.
You weren't here the day I just dug holes. I literally just dug holes in flattened land. Like, what's crazy, you know, when you buy land, you mm-hmm. don't realize that, like, all the rocks and all the dirt on that land is all in the wrong places.
Mm-hmm.
You need that dirt and rocks in other areas.
Time to move the rocks from where they are to slightly up the hill to where they belong.
Yep.
Smooth out that dirt.
Gotta smooth it out. You need a level surface for future things.
It's beautiful here, but we're struggling. We're also recording on our phones because we did bring semi-professional equipment that appears to have failed in some way that we're not sure about. So,
and look, it's not our fault. We FaceTimed Zig.
We
were
like, Zig,
we might be dumb. Tell us how to do this. And I think the thing literally just decided to fail.
Might be broken.
So anyway.
So that's it.
That's why you're mad about the audio quality if you're listening in your car.
That's the show. We're sorry. Just think of it as this is the true desert compound experience.
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah, this is the slightly grainy, hostage-y sounding audio that leaked out of my cult when the police raided it.
It really is true. Please, if anyone can rescue me, Tawny is keeping me in the dungeon.
Well.
And...
just until you learn some manners.
I'm just podcasting until she's making me podcast until I get the perfect cast and then I can leave. She said she won't free me until 100,000 people rate and review us on iTunes.
So you can help free Andrew.
Also, I'm a little drunk.
Well, we had a long day. There's a lot of rock moving. Should we talk about this week in racism?
Yes, we should. I realize since we're recording this on our phones, normally I use my phone to tell me what we have to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. So after, we had a bit of a debacle on the Amber Geiger racist murderer news that... it did manage to have like a third or fourth wrinkle.
It kept spiraling. So we got, Amber Geiger, of course, was the off-duty Dallas PD officer who murdered Botham John in his own home, mm-hmm. claiming that she believed it was her home and she was just shooting the motherfucker who was watching television in her home, apparently.
It's crazy.
It's a crazy defense.
She was a racist murderer.
Did not work. They found her guilty. But then the shenanigans of...
when we first recorded last week, it was about the judge was trying essentially to get the racist murderer exonerated by telling the jury they could consider the Castle Doctrine or Castle Defense, which is essentially that you're allowed to murder people who break into your home. A little barbaric, but I guess understandable or defensible. By trying to expand that doctrine to include if you think you're in your own home. Which, by the way, does that mean if you just take enough, like, LSD or something and just murder people, you can say you thought you were in your own
home? Yeah, I thought I was in my house.
Yeah.
I thought this Popeye's chicken was my home.
Mm-hmm.
And I killed a bunch of people in it.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. So...
Tawny's automatic trash can just opened because we yelled loud enough. That's cool.
Don't tell people about my... stupid impulse trash can purchase.
Robot trash can. It's response to voice commands.
No, it's nothing. It's nothing. I have a regular waste paper bin like a normal person.
Anyway, I mentioned that. And then I didn't realize at the time that the judge was a black woman. That sort of put an optical, was an issue, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think it made the media very interested in.
It made it seem weird. But then I think in retrospect, it's clear that this cop was or sorry, this judge was extremely interested in getting Amber Geiger off. The jury recommended 25 years. She sentenced her to only 10 years. And then she gave her a fucking hug after the sentencing, which was very divisive.
Yes. I also think, and then, of course, we heard from Botham Jean's brother and I believe father, who both said that they forgave her. They cited their faith as being a reason to forgive their family member's murderer, mm-hmm. which is all fine.
Yeah.
I wasn't in the courtroom, but it feels as though a lot of people, the judge included, got swept up in this white woman's extreme tears. There was a lot of tears happening. There was a lot of hysterics. There was a lot of, who knows if you want to call it genuine remorse or at least just extreme reaction to being caught and being sentenced.
Yeah.
Basically, or being found guilty. So, you know, it's possible for a whole room and you know it's being, parts of it are being filmed and you know that even if you're, you know, the jury, you're instructed not to pay attention to the media response to it, you know that this is causing a national discussion.
Yeah. To me, I just think like, I still think it's wholly, wholly, wholly inappropriate for a judge to hug a murderer. And I guess I would just say for sure that doesn't happen when the murderers are black, because you would see it. But yes, people can get swept up in things, and I understand that, I guess. Like, to me, it was just like the real racial divide of the reaction to it.
Yeah.
Like, white people were all like, this is, you know, especially the family hugging her. I was like, this is the most inspiring thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, true forgiveness.
Yeah. And it is this thing where it's like, you know, the argument is that where the reason it's kind of a problem is that, like, black folks and other people of color who are oppressed, like their forgiveness and bigness is like, you know, elevated to such a high level. And it's like, it's valued so much by the country that has done so much terrible things to them, because like racist ass America expects and requires black people to forgive everyone else for, or, you know, people of color in general.
Oh, yes.
For like the terrible things that our racist society does to them, or else it wouldn't function. It's just like,
gross. Yeah, it wouldn't function. This society has to, black people have to forgive this country every day to live here.
Yeah.
Like we have to forgive and forget in a way to even just fucking be here. So of course, like, that's going to get a bunch of attention because that's the pacifier. Yeah. That's what makes everyone feel comfortable. It's like, see,
we can't, it's okay that we did all the slavery.
See, when white people fuck up, black people are still, there's so much grace.
Yeah.
Such grace.
Yeah. I forgot someone at work pointed this out, and it's you don't see fucking the Goldman family, who famously continue going after OJ, which is probably correct.
Mm.
Like, you don't see them forgiving OJ and hugging him and shit like that. Like,
right.
It's like there's no expectation that like white people are like, you know, allowed to have their revenge. And it's like, I see it, I understand it.
Right.
And it's this thing where it's like, yes, forgiveness is good. But this sort of leans into the area of like using, like, forgiveness is so asymmetrically applied and lauded.
Yes. And I think it's that thing we talk about a lot, which is like in a microcosm, the forgiveness of this family to this woman can be a good thing, can be a positive thing in a way. But in a larger conversation, and that is how it has become online and just with the reporting on it, it has become a larger conversation. So unfortunately, it becomes representative of the fact that black people's forgiveness is the only thing that kind of sets the world right a little bit. Like, it's the only thing that makes anybody feel better about the way this country was put together. So it reinforces that.
Yeah.
And then we're always expected to do it. We're always expected to take the high road, you know, when you see...
Take the high road in the face of atrocity and tragedy.
Truly. I can't wait till I'm expected to take the high road and I fucking tunnel under the bitch.
Yeah.
I'm going to dig a goddamn subway and get petty as hell.
Yeah. and even that would be, is like, wholly justifiable and fine. It's like... I don't know. So that sort of became the thing. It was a little bit of a bummer, the number of people. It was just funny watching like sort of the white media being like, mm-hmm. this is incredible. I was at the, I think maybe the morning after, watching at the gym and the news. I didn't have the sound on, but it was just like four or five white people and one black person discussing it. Mm. And you could just tell it was all just like, oh, this is so amazing. And it's like, I mean, it's fine if they want to do that, but like, too many cops kill too many black people for zero good reasons.
Do you think that there's also a lot of people just wanting, people not wanting racism to exist and not wanting to have to stare this in the face as much, so they want more stories like this? And like on both sides, course. Like black people and white people probably want this to go away. So if we can look at this one instance of people forgiving this woman as a solve.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a lot of people are eager for it.
Well, and then the fifth or sixth dark twist to this is that, so the key witness in this, Joshua Brown, who was Botham Jean's neighbor, was mysteriously murdered a couple days ago.
What?
Yup. Sorry, I could have set that to the thread. I forgot that you weren't on Twitter that much out here in the desert.
I did not even fucking catch that.
Yeah, so he was just murdered. I mean, it's mysterious. Look, the conspiracy theories are that the cops went and killed him.
What the fuck? But she's already been sentenced. What does that even do?
Just revenge. Tells you not to testify against cops. I mean, the cops are a racist criminal gang, largely speaking. Jesus Christ. I don't know. I mean, I know that's a conspiracy theory and blah, blah, blah. But it feels, you know what I mean? It's like the same way like the Ferguson activists keep dying and you're like,
yeah, it's a conspiracy theory, except we also live in this country and
fucking, and things like that happen. So, look, either way, there's too many guns, there's too much violence, but ugh. So that was heartwarming and uplifting. Mm. Almost as heartwarming and uplifting as the Joker movie. I'm just kidding. Who cares? Do we care? Do we have anything to say about it other than...
I'm just kidding. Who cares? Should be the new name of this podcast. Segment. The desert versions of this podcast are called that.
Oh,
I did not see it. Did you see it?
No, I didn't see it.
I'm fine if people want to see it. I don't care.
Well, so I will say I probably am less fine with people wanting to see it. I don't really want to hang out with anyone who really wanted to see it, if I'm being honest. However, the one story, which I also forgot to send in the thread, so I'll just tell you now, Tawny. Mm-hmm. There was a screening, I believe, in New York, where a guy was, like, laughing, like performatively laughing every time the Joker killed someone.
Cool.
And spitting on people.
Oh, very
and
safe.
And he was sort of, he was ultimately escorted out of the theater. People were leaving the theater because it was scary. And a black guy who identified himself to the press as V for Vegas was the one who kind of like isolated him and sort of tried to de-escalate it long enough for the cops to get there. I have no particular racial angle on this other than, of course, I guess it seems like, of course, it was going to be a black guy that had to take responsibility for this. Who
black
knows?
People stay saving us.
I guess, look, a black dude who calls himself V for Vegas, I don't want to... definitely make him a hero.
I'm sorry.
Who the hell knows?
I need clarification that you may not have. Was this man saying, my name's V? And the cops were like, I'm sorry, was that P? And he's like, no, like V for Vegas. Or was he like, my name's V for Vegas, say it all at once or don't say it at all?
The two things I saw quoted, but I think one of them was Twitter, was, you know, quote, V for Vegas, end quote.
I hope he's a DJ.
I hope so too.
I hope he's DJ a very well-paid, like, selling out fucking stadiums type DJ. Good for you, V for Vegas, but well, also...
We assume.
we assume, yeah.
We have done no more research, and we will not unless something terrible or really good happens.
Yeah, unless somebody tweet yells at us about it. That's
You're probably fine.
The amount of research we do. I don't know.
Kamala Harris?
Oh, yeah. So if you guys didn't see, some Twitter white... posted a clip of Kamala in, I believe she was in Iowa, speaking to a crowd. And he said, and this was like a 35 or 40 second clip. So long enough for him to have like presumably listened to it. He said, I don't like that Kamala has a Southern accent. She grew up in Berkeley. And then the thread, depending on your algorithm, the thread below it, for me, was every black person I know and respect saying, this is called code switching. This is not a Southern accent. Because what Kamala was doing was not speaking with a Southern accent. She was saying things like y'all and just like, you know, I mean, it was literally the definition of code switching. And the white people in the thread were either not understanding, sorry, the bigots in the thread were either not understanding it or not wanting to understand it and yeah. thought she was pandering to a, quote, Southern audience, of which she was not even in the South. So that argument doesn't even make sense.
But it's really, the y'all thing is a little tricky because it's like, there are previous guests on the show, I think before you were on, Christine Nangle tweeted a thing about how she, like, the worst people are white people who say y'all. And she said not in the Southern way.
Mm-hmm.
And people still just don't listen, I guess. I'm just like, but what about people from the South? And it's like, yeah, it's not exactly what we're talking about. I mean, ultimately, that kind of contraction, I think, comes from the underclasses of America.
Yes.
But, yeah, they've taken, you know, the y'all. I feel like the map of y'all migration has, like, such... Well, takes a pretty fucked up turn somewhere around the Mason-Dixon line.
You know what's interesting is you'll still get y'allers. Yeah, we're going to call them y'allers.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who says y'all involuntarily, like you mm-hmm. didn't think about it and plan to say it to appeal folksy.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's in your vernacular. The y'allers exist in rural environments, even in the far north.
Yeah.
So it gets weird where you can be white and rural and just super country and have never spent any time in the South. And it's totally natural.
Yeah.
So it is a weird, but...
Yeah, it's the vernacular of the underclass.
Yeah.
And it does point out that racist white people in the South shouldn't be mad at, in most of their cases, black people. We all, people of color and those people, have a common enemy. Rich white people.
Yeah.
Go after them.
Truly go after anybody but ourselves.
Yeah.
But this guy clearly didn't understand. And, you know, he was one of those Red Rose Twitter motherfucker, like Bernie people who had some quip underneath it about how he was like, people ad nauseum critique the speaking habits of my candidate, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, you're not critiquing her speaking habits from a knowledgeable place. You clearly don't understand that black people, when surrounded by mostly other black people, speak a very different way. Or when you're me on this podcast and sometimes you just like don't feel like cleaning up your language. but it is like, I think I've talked about before how when I first meet people, I try to just be like, I'm going to talk how I talk. I'm going to talk either way I want. It's not going to be dependent on who's around, especially when I first meet them, because I don't want it to be like a surprise 2 weeks in.
Mm.
To have people suddenly be like, well, you sound real black. Because that used to happen when I was a kid, because I was so used to cleaning up my language because I was in this white ass fucking suburb. It was just all Mormons and kids from migrant families that did not talk to me because we did not share the same language.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want anyone to ever be like, oh, suddenly you sound away. It's like, no, it's all in there.
Right.
It's all in there at once.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I mean,
so really, it's Kamala's fault for not having.
Yeah, Kamala, you should have brought it out sooner, sis. Is what I'm saying. Is like you waited too long, and all these white people got lulled into a false sense of security because you were talking too white. So now you got to go harder. Actually, that is what I think she should do: is just go so hard.
Mm-hmm.
just go so hard into like the thickest ass. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, I was just mad that still in the year of our Lord 2019, people don't know what code switching is.
I guess there's no point in arguing within the left wing type people. Everyone's fine. But it is a little bit like galling when people who are supposed to know better just have so little experience, especially, I guess, with the rise of like left wing economic populism.
Mm.
All these people... who think like money is the only issue. Like it's always the class, not race people
mm-hmm.
who don't understand that race is intrinsically tied to class. Like slavery was an economic system.
Yeah.
Slavery was stealing work
mm-hmm.
and freedom. Like,
and you have class the class you have because of generational wealth.
Yeah.
That we just don't ever have.
Yeah, those things are intrinsically linked, and pretending that they're not is essentially being the, yeah. Like, I get it, and it is correct, except it's the not that isn't correct. It's like class and race, and they're different, but linked. And like,
I feel like that's everything when we talk about intersectional anything is this and that, not this, not that.
Yeah. And it's wild. It's just wild how, like, that's so hard to drive in, or they get so focused on that one thing. You know, it's the same way that racist-ass Andrew Yang can be.
Here we go. I knew, like, we couldn't go an episode without it.
Because it's like, there, you know, people, like, now when his, like, fucking assholes get into my mentions, it's like, oh, well, you understand that, like, people of color would be better off under Andrew Yang, and because of the money thing. And it's like, yeah, maybe, but no. Like, an equitable system would have to consider things like that, because, like, society doesn't have equality of opportunity for people because of things like race. It's just, like, yeah, pathetic. I fucking hate them still.
Also, like, I mean, is he going to fix gender parity? Like, would queer people be better under there? Like, this
is... I mean, their claim is just, like, everyone who's economically... who's oppressed in any way is only economically oppressed, and thus their problems are solved with merely money, which is incorrect and ignorant and wrong.
I once heard in this coloring book called The Bible, where they said, if you give a man a fish, that's not very good. But if you teach a man how to go to the store and choose the right fish, that's marginally better. But
what
then,
about if the man is barred from the store because he's not a white?
Then you have to move. Oh, who did we talk to this week?
Oh my God. Tawny was once again in outer space.
Oh, fuck. I'm sorry. This is two in a row, you guys. You guys have been really patient with me. I'm sorry. I'm doing a big job. It's been very tough on all of our schedules. Andrew and Zig are the best and have held shit together.
Tawny is in outer space. It's fine. We sat down with the hilarious and amazing Shea Serrano. His book, Movies and Other Things. We predicted on when we recorded it that it was going to be a New York Times bestseller. I think we can stand by that. It's going to be number one-ish. It's going to be a number one New York Times bestseller. We'll say it. Who knows? We haven't seen the ratings. Books have ratings.
There's no way you or I know, and there's no internet at this place.
I don't even know how the TV works,
and you won't, because you're not going to be released.
Oh my God, it's so horrible. All right, here's Shay.
We should just kind of roll in.
Yeah, we do a little cold open, then we slide on in.
We find a cold open.
Yeah.
We don't have one.
Yeah.
We certainly don't have jack shit prepared, besides the voicemails, I guess.
Yeah.
How's your trip? How's Texas? What's that like these days?
Texas is hot.
Yeah.
That's how it is. Wait, are we doing the thing right now? Are we in it?
I mean, it's recording, but we can find where we're in it.
Okay. Yeah, Texas is good. I'm in San Antonio.
Yeah.
Me, my family, like my immediate family, also my like mom and dad immediate family, we're all there, so it's cool.
Oh shit. That's dope. Wait, did you always live in Texas?
Mm-hmm. My whole life I'm a Texas boy, baby.
Oh damn.
Yeah.
Damn. I had no idea. For some reason I just assumed as a media elite. Number one.
One of the two coasts that he was on.
Best-selling New York Times best-selling author, Shea Serrano, I would have assumed.
Most people
know,
do.
New York. This I guess, like, I would have assumed New York.
This is like the third conversation I've had where they're like, so what are you doing in from New York?
Yeah.
Like, dude, I don't know.
You don't need that shit.
No, we have the internet in San Antonio, so we're like... We're
when
fine.
Did you get it, though?
We got it. Well, it's dial up. It's like slower, but we got it. So we're good.
The words still transmit. Oh, man. Fuck. Can you talk about any of the stuff you're in town to work on, or you're just...
We're just doing book stuff right now. I'm recording a bunch of podcasts and doing some video stuff. And, you know, the book comes out on the 8th. So we're like...
Nice.
Get ready mode, yeah.
Do you want to talk about the book at all, or...
Yeah, we can talk about the book. It's really good. It's probably the best book of all the books. It's called Movies and Other Things. It's about movies and also a few other things.
Oh, shit.
And
it's right in there.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, we have a lot of illustrations in there. We got some fun like little charts and it's just like a high five to a bunch of movies that I like.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
How'd you get on that train?
Well, originally, this is the second in a series of three. The first one was Basketball and Other Things. Mm-hmm. And that one came out in 2017. And I really liked working on that one. The way that the books are set up, each chapter is a different question that needs to be answered. So in the basketball book, each chapter was a different basketball question that needed to be answered. And some of them were serious, some of them were a little sillier. But mostly they were all just like giving me the opportunity to talk about this thing that I care a great deal about.
Yes.
And that book came out and it did really well. Mm-hmm. It's number one on the list.
Yeah.
It's got multiple rings. We stand.
It got mentioned by President Obama on his like favorite books of the year
list. That's right.
Oh, dope. Yeah.
It was like I forgot about that. It's hard to forget about that, I suppose.
No, but the book came out and it did well enough that the publishers were like, hey, do you want to do another book? And I said, yeah, I really like this one, and I would like to make it like a series. Like when you're a kid, you had like encyclopedias in the house or whatever. Yeah. Like I want to do like a goofy version of that. And so we were just figuring out, you know, what word are we replacing basketball with? And movies felt like an obvious pick. Like we have a year in movies. There's like a big championship at the end with the Oscars. And you've got, you know, winners and losers and like surprising stuff that happens. So the pieces fit. We pitched the idea, me and Arturo, and the publishers bought it, and
hell yeah,
now here we are.
That's amazing. Nice. And that is coming out on October 8th.
October 8th, yes.
Tight. That's awesome. I'm glad. I'm just also like truly glad. I was like, this can't possibly work. We can just reach out to people and they can come on podcasts.
Y'all are very popular podcast, and it's like a funny podcast to listen to, which are my favorite one. So
wow, thanks. I'm glad we're hearing that.
Yeah,
the stress worth it.
Just a little bit of something. Yeah. Shit. Well, let's fire out a voicemail and then we can keep talking.
Dope.
Hi, Andrew, Tawny, and guests. I am a white woman. Just doing her best, and
that's racist.
There's a neighborhood in my city.
Get ready.
That is a predominantly black neighborhood. It is low rent prices, which has drawn a lot of small business to the area, but those small businesses are all white run, so I'm torn between supporting those small businesses and seeing them as taking advantage of maybe a situation that could be used for someone, maybe a person of color who wants to open a business. Just wanted to see what you guys had in terms of what you thought was going on here. Thanks. Love the show. Sorry.
Oh, she jumped in with the sorry because she knew I was about to say, you got to talk faster. I'm so sorry, callers. We appreciate the calls.
Andrew does not suffer slowness.
You got to talk faster. Oh man, gentrification.
Yeah, I mean, just listening to this, like, I realized that I've only had to deal with gentrification at really at only one point in my life. So I went to grad school in Savannah, Georgia.
It just occurred to me also, producer Zig is stepping in for Tawny.
Oh yeah, producer Zig here. Tawny is still in space. So when I moved to Savannah, Georgia, when I was 25, I moved to this like. Moved to Savannah, like a predominantly black city. There is an art school there, so there is like this sort of push where like literally you can hit like 6th Street and it becomes just all white kids, rich white kids. But we found this one little section of town that we literally called Narnia because it was one street in between like a liquor store and like basically like a juke joint and a fried chicken shack. So it's three black people move into this one house. And over the course of like my 3 years there, we literally went from like hearing gunshots twice a week to like, oh, there's a bakery. There's like a roasted coffee shop. There's like a brewery moving in. So like you literally went from like over the course of 3 years, seeing this one little like slice of neighborhood go from like people that looked like us to like people that look like your classmates.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was like just a weird section of being like, all right, are we the gentrifiers? Like we're black. We look like these people. Like we go to the barbershops. We give these people money. But are we like, we're not from this area.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
We have money to move into this house.
Yeah.
And you still pay the increasing rent as it went up over the years.
You kind of started it maybe.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's weird when it's like in your face like that.
Yeah.
Oh man. Shay, is this like a coastal discussion, or is this like something that is like more everywhere than I'm able to process?
I'm sure it happens everywhere. I've never dealt with any sort of gentrification.
Yeah.
When I grew up in San Antonio, I grew up on the South Side, mm-hmm. Which is like almost exclusively Hispanic.
Yeah.
My school was 98% Hispanic. Like every classroom I walked in, every store I walked in, every like place of business I walked in, everybody looked like I looked. Brown hair, brown eyes, same sort of accent. Mm-hmm. Last name ends in a vowel or an S or a Z or something. Mm-hmm. Like that didn't happen where I was. It didn't happen like when I moved to Houston after college. We lived in a Hispanic neighborhood. It was the mm-hmm. same sort of thing. I never watched like a bunch of white people move in and buy up stuff. Mm-hmm. So I don't.
Do you think, has that held true for Houston? It feels like Houston is a town that is changing. Am I?
Oh, it definitely is. But just now, I didn't have enough money
directly.
I didn't have enough money to be like at the beginning of it. But I also wasn't so poor that I was like getting gentrified.
You're right in the middle.
Sweet spot. They're leaving us alone right now.
Right. And then you got back, you got the hell out of there.
And then when the book popped and we were like, oh shit, we're not poor anymore. Now we're going to reverse gentrify. And we moved in with all the rich white people.
Okay.
And so that's the move now.
God.
Yeah, that's what my dad did. Like him and my stepmom moved in. Like they were like the black family in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And then like one more came like 2 years later. So like we're sort of like reverse gentrifying this white cul-de-sac. It's like they never saw fish fries until like the Ziegler's moved in.
Interesting. Does that feel like that? Because that isn't a really different thing because that's still socioeconomic when you're moving into the white neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can change the complexion of it with money, at least.
Yeah.
You can only use your face.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Is that something you're cognizant of now? Like, I'm getting into, like, just by virtue of, like, you know, being from the South, like, my parents didn't have access to money and resources that I have now. So, like, I am cognizant of, like, what neighborhoods that I do look at. Like, I don't want to be the gentrifier moving into a neighborhood if I can afford to move into it, you know?
It's hard not to, though, or it's hard because it's... Yeah, it's sort of like the eternal problem of like having values, but living in especially in a big city like this one, because LA is like all about gentrification. And mm-hmm. so it's all about like kicking people out, moving. LA, I feel like, does it the worst. Like New York, this is extremely ignorant what I'm about to say.
But I have to get dragged.
It feels like in New York, at least it happens slowly. You know, at least it's like, it kind of like what this lady's describing of like, you know, like poor artists, white, even though they're white, come in and there's like small businesses. And then like, at least like people of color have moved out slowly in New York. That might be crazy. But in New York, in LA, it's like it goes from 0 to 60. It goes from like.
Then wooden fences start popping up.
Yeah.
Like, I know what's going on here.
Yeah, I can physically, I can physically see the redlining in LA where I'm like. Black people.
But maybe that's part of it, is LA's always been more segregated, so it's just easier to gentrify because it's just like, you know, the capital in the form of white people can just swoop into anywhere. I don't know. But someone hit me up on Twitter. Tell me what the fuck was just wrong with my argument. I'm sure something was incorrect about it. But it feels different in LA, I guess. That's maybe my main thing.
Yeah, so this lady's question being should she support, like, should she feel problematic or weird for supporting white business owners that move into, assuming, a predominantly black neighborhood?
Yeah, I think that's what she said.
I don't know. I mean, because I don't know the people, like, if they're, like, did they support the neighborhood? It seems like they're bringing business in. I don't know. Like my only one-to-one of that is growing up in a super small country town where like everyone just had to be white to own a business. Like there was no concept of like black people even having that resource to like own like the restaurants or the foods or the like the corner stores or whatever.
Yeah. I feel like functionally you're going to go to those businesses, but you should feel bad about it. At least feel bad about it. At least have the decency to feel guilty.
Well, she did call into the show, so maybe she's on the right track.
Feel more guilty than you did feel, but everyone should feel guilty at least as a baseline.
Right.
And try to support like the black businesses. Like, you know, it's understandable. Like some, you know, not every product is for you. And there probably is some like inevitability to gentrification that's mm-hmm. like, ugh. But at least feel bad about it and try to do good, even though you know you're not. Is that fucking pathetic?
A big part of it probably has to do with the type of business that it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you're in a neighborhood, like if I'm if I'm picturing where I grew up and all of a sudden there's a new shop popping up, a new shopping strip, and you're like, all right, cool, like I get it, this place, oh, they have like healthy food. Oh, that's a good one to have here. But if you're like, oh, we make like artisanal roasted coffee beans that you, you like, I don't like, that doesn't help my family at all.
Yeah.
You're just trying to be cute or trendy and like wear a little hat or whatever.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't serve the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I think he has the best advice out of all of us.
Yeah.
Does it serve the neighborhood? Then I think you're good. If not, then I guess call in and
don't do it.
And don't do it.
Oh, they're going to do it though. That's the problem. They're going to do it.
I think we solved. We kind of solved it.
No, we didn't. Fire up another one.
Yeah.
Hi, Tawny, Andrew, and guests. I'm calling about something that recently happened in my state. So there was someone who raised a ton of money for a children's hospital. You may have seen it on the news. He got matches from a couple of different major companies for this children's hospital. And, of course, because he was in the public eye, someone went digging and found some tweets that he had sent out in high school that were bordering on racist, and they were quoting Tosh.0, I think, and he addressed it head on and said, wow, what basically, like, what a dumb high schooler I was. I'm ashamed that I would ever think those things were funny. I am so sorry for the damage they may have caused, and I've learned so much about racism and how we're all responsible for addressing it since then. So basically addressed it head on. But he's getting some flack for it, obviously, because he did some racist tweets out when he was in high school. So in the time where we are holding people accountable for what they've done in high school, I'm just wondering, what do you guys think about this? Is it racist? Can people learn? Do we acknowledge that he's come a long way? Or do we just say, well, he did that in high school and that's really shitty, so bye. All right, thanks so much.
I think that's maybe one of the most perfect questions, because we are all three extremely logged on dudes on the internet, it seems like.
Yeah. So this is obviously, we're talking cancel culture. We're talking Twitter.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I don't know. How do you feel about that stuff, Shay? Are you involved in any of these discussions over, I feel like they're kind of happening right now?
Yeah, everybody is involved in it, whether you want to be or not.
Yeah, I very much don't want to be in it. Yeah. Why am I here?
Yeah. I think this is going to be the same for any of these questions that we hear. It's just a matter of how do you feel about a certain situation. It's hard to answer a question without more specifics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one thing to make a joke that you made in high school and you read it and you're like, this was clearly a joke you made in high school. Like, two Mexicans walk into a bar or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. Or if it's just straight up like, I fucking hate wetbacks. Like, that's a different thing. Mm. Those should be handled differently.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think. I don't know. But everybody sort of fucks up at some point.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of being like, dang, I should probably not fuck up like that anymore.
Yeah, that's sort of my take. It seems like, I think she said this person was a politician. So I'm assuming there's at least a 10 to 15 year age separation between high school tweets and
their
age now. And my thought process is, it's sort of twofold. One, I think you can definitely acknowledge like their whackness of like a 17-year-old being racist or sexist, like, that's still bad. But I think I mean, this could be used against me in the future. But I think if this person has grown and they do acknowledge, like, yo, what I said was whack, it was damaging, it hurt people, like, you're under no obligation to forgive that person. But I do think if they've acknowledged how sort of bad the thing that they said was, I think they're doing what they can do. You know, I don't know. I think there's also a problem, or not, maybe not a problem, but there is something that seems bad faith about digging up like 10-year-old tweets. I don't know. That seems weird to me. Like, if I look at the tweets of someone who's maybe now 25, if I go up and look up their tweets when they were 15, 16, like, I know they're probably going to be trash.
Yeah.
Like, I know I had trash ass thoughts when I was 16. Yeah. You know?
You know what's interesting is I have children now who are in the 7th grade.
Oh, snap. Okay.
And
that's they're
12.
You let them like use Twitter and stuff?
They're on the internet. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they have, I don't think they have Twitter, but they're definitely on the internet. I see them like on TikTok or whatever, like their little WhatsApp group chats all this stuff. And it's interesting to watch these conversations that are happening now between the adults and then the way that the kids are sort of interacting with each other mm-hmm. on the internet. Because like when the kids all come over and they're all sort of hanging out, they've got their little group together. Like it sounds so much different than when me and my friends were hanging out. Like mm-hmm. they are already sort of policing what they're saying. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a little more mature already. They're like, no, you're not allowed to like make that joke.
Oh, that's dope. Not allowed to say
this. Do you think you just have good kids though?
This sort of stuff. I don't think so. I think they are regular kids who just are doing regular things, but like, it's weird in like a good way to watch this happen. And mm-hmm. and so I'm like trying to figure out, all right, cool. The adults are handling it over here. The children are handling it here. Like there's progress that's being made.
Yeah.
It seems like. But the only way that that progress happens is when like somebody messes up. It seems like.
That's interesting. And it was interesting the other thing you said too about like sort of the context of the you know, previous incarnation, we'll say, like, mm-hmm. well, yeah, because I guess there is probably some level of hateful that you probably just genuinely should not be able to come back from. Like, there's something you could have said, no matter how ill-formed your frontal lobe is, that you're just, that's it. That's a wrap on your, at least public life.
Yeah.
But I guess to me, I'm just like, how canceled really are people? Because it doesn't, even this dude is just like, some of those people are mad at him.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine.
Yeah, well,
how bad does that really feel?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what... I mean, I think cancel culture is a misnomer.
People mad at me all the time.
Yeah, we argue against racism.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think we've probably talked a bit about it before, but just the, you know, misnomer of cancel culture. Like, I think worse is you lose your job in IT. Like, if you get canceled and you go to another place and get another job.
I found out that woman who's, like, sort of famously used as an example... in the book that I very much don't like, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, a woman who like tweeted, was in PR and like tweeted about like,
oh, she was on the flight.
And I'm going to Africa. Yeah. Hope I don't get AIDS. And then was fired by the time she landed. She's back working in PR.
Yeah.
She ain't canceled.
Right. Yeah.
That's all. And I just said, to me, that's like held up as like the most egregious, like, you know, misuse of the public lynch mob, essentially. And mm-hmm. it's like, doesn't feel like she suffered that much.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of factors that kind of play into it. I mean, also, I think time. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I think the most one-to-one comparison would be Shane Gillis, just because he was in the news. Like, mm-hmm. going back 6 months and finding wild shit that you've said on a podcast that's racist or sexist or whatever.
Yeah.
Probably hits a lot more than going back 7 years and seeing some really dumb tweets that you made.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Like, and like maybe interim, like intervening, you know, works or time. Well, how about this, Shay? Do you think like you can ever redeem yourself then? If it's like, you know, on the like, well, whatever, however bad, like, you know, hateful you can be as a kid.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, again, we are sort of just sort of walking around in a room with our eyes closed.
Yeah, of course.
We don't have a bunch of the details, but
that is the sort of
the internet works.
Yeah, and it's also one of the hallmarks of this show is like somehow people like talk too long and still don't convey enough information. Like, just say it. Just say all the nouns and also the adjectives that let us understand what's happening here. So we'll never know.
I think part of it is, again, once you have all the details and like, are you allowed to come back from this or not allowed to come back from this? In almost all the instances we've seen so far, the person is allowed to come back from whatever the thing is. But I think it's probably unfair to expect people to like not associate you with this thing anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I think if a thing is bad enough, there should probably be no point where you don't walk into like an interview or whatever and expect for them not to ask you.
Yeah. At least like you have to explain yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause and it's like that, yo, this shit was pretty fucked up.
That's part of it. And that might not even be like so much of a shaming and reintegration type thing, but more just like the more we talk about it, the more everybody seems to understand it a little bit better.
Yeah.
Which is why like a podcast like this exists now. This podcast would not have been around, you know, 10 years ago. Or
right, right, right.
Yeah.
But now it's important.
That's nice of you to say. Let's do one more voicemail.
Hey, my name is Brianna, and I'm a Black woman from Philadelphia. I currently work at a theater where one day our house manager, who was a Hispanic man, interacted with a patron, and they were just talking about the weather and how cool or hot it was outside. And this white woman patron said, oh, well, it must just be your hot Latin blood that, like, keeps you so warm when it's chilly out. And he just kind of, like, shrugged his shoulders. And me, I'm just looking around the space because I want to know, how can I interact with this patron and our house manager without getting fired in a professional setting? So if you have any advice, love the show, let me know.
Oh, yeah.
That... I feel like everyone's been in some type of situation where you're did this white person really just say this wild ass thing?
What? Yeah. I mean, okay, so the question is sort of like, how do I go about this?
It seems this has always been mostly my experience of the past couple of years is like whenever I walk into a space and like I clock other people of color, particularly black people, but if I say the people of color, we do like the what's up nod. Mm-hmm. And when someone shows out and says some wild, crazy white shit, we always lock eyes and we're like, they tripping, right? Yeah. That's been my experiences personally. Like, this is different because there seems like they're in like a work environment where like this house manager, I'm assuming, is their boss. Seems like there's some type of power structure, which may change a little bit.
Yeah.
But for me personally, like, I have not had trouble yet, like, walking up to another person of color and being like, that was kind of racist, right? Like, that was wildly racist. That's been my experience. It may be different. Your mileage may vary.
Are you allowed to say something to the patron, though? To, like, the non-employee?
Oh, to the patron. I don't know. That would be tough. I think that's where I have no answer for that.
I think that's maybe where the line, because it's then at that point you could be fucking with
income for the
someone else's income, whatever.
What's interesting to me about this particular question is the thing that the woman mentions to the guy, that it must be your hot Latin blood.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of a cool thing. Like, as far as stereotypes go, the Hispanic community, we don't hate that part.
Is that even true, though?
No, our blood is not literally hotter than...
What is this?
But we're very fiery. We're fiery and we're like, we're passionate and we're ready to fight or make love, it turns out, at a moment's notice. So it doesn't sound like such like a terror. If she would have been like, oh, it must be your beaner blood beaning up again, like that's
the key is the compliment in the racist
comment.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm sensitive to that shit because I hate all the Asians who love the Asian stereotypes. Like the we're good at math shit.
I mean, y'all got some good ones.
Yeah, but here's what it is. Here's what it is specifically, I don't conform to the parts of the good ones. Like, I'm not that good at math. I'm not a fucking doctor.
My jump shot's trash. I was
So it's one of those things where I'm like, fuck.
So the like trap here is if you're like, all right, like Hispanics, we got some good ones. Like a... accepting the good ones means like we also sort of have to deal with the bad ones. Right. We don't just get the one part of it.
Yeah.
So
that's the racist's carrot in the stick. They're like, oh, don't you want this? Aren't you tempted? It is the evil temptation. Shay, is there ever a time where you feel like you can't speak out? Because I mean, I feel like there's so many times just in the entertainment industry where you're like, I'm going to shut the fuck up now. Mm-hmm. Mainly that's why this podcast exists, so I can briefly not shut the fuck up.
I have not been made to feel like I couldn't say something. Mm-hmm. I think probably a big part of that though is because I'm older now. I'm 38 years old. Mm-hmm. I've been with my wife for 19 years. Mm-hmm. I've been a father for 12 years. Like, I don't know, a little less nervous about stuff not going my way.
Oh, sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I've never like...
Also, where there's, I'm actually older than you, but you know, it's fine.
I've never been like, I'm still nervous. I shouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
Probably though, that's probably due to my hot Latin blood.
Boom.
Taking my good sense.
I think that maybe, I think that maybe we've hit like the hard line of like you can't really fuck with someone else's like they can unfortunately are going to have to stand up for themselves? Is this too like weaselly an answer?
No, I think this is what what's coming to my thought process. Like I used to work at like at the theater, like a comedy theater. Mm-hmm. And I think if I experienced that, what I would do is after this patron left, run up to this house manager, talk to him like, yo, if this happens again, could I step in? Would that be out of line? I'm like, that seems to be the easiest solution for this. Is like,
oh, that's true.
Almost like a preemptive, like next time this happens, would it be out of line if I stepped up and called this person?
That's a good answer. Yeah.
Because like I've definitely been in situations at a theater where like some patrons were like, this is mainly like drunk and walling out. Like I'm not a bouncer. I can't touch them. Like, what should I do?
Yeah.
So I think that's the easiest solution.
I feel like in a lot of places too, it's like next time this happens, and there will be a next time.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
Yeah. Snap.
Oh, we solved it, right? I think we solved one of three, right?
We
gave them some good answers for the third one.
Oh my God. We're fucking like on point today. Fucking Shay, thank you so much for coming in, man.
Yeah, of course.
This has been a delight to finally meet you. Love you on the internet.
I was excited to come.
Can you tell people again, like where to pick up the new book and all this stuff?
You can get it anywhere they sell books. Barnes & Noble, independent stores, Amazon. It's everywhere. Totally.
You have a Twitter or Instagram people can check you out on?
Yeah, you could follow the Twitter. Is just my name, Shay Serrano.
Dope.
All I'm talking about right now is the book. That's like all you're getting.
We'll link it in the description of the episode. We'll help you out.
Book.
Yeah.
Get the goddamn book. All right. Thanks.
And we're back.
I'm
still chained to this radiator in the basement of the desert compound.
Radiator? You think we have radiant heat?
I guess not.
Uh-huh.
It's just a big rock.
Yeah, this is a big rock you're chained to. I'm sad I missed that. Shay is a fun Twitter follow and a smart person. And it's a good interview.
Incredible, incredible writer. Check out the book. Just make sure it stays on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah.
That's how books work.
Yeah. You guys keep it up there with your by reading it.
Yeah.
Read it a bunch and tell people about it.
Yeah. What else happens now?
What would you write a book about?
I will say, actually, someone hit me up this week. This is going to be news to you, but was like, are you working on a Yo, Is This Racist book? And I told them I should talk to Tawny about it.
And you guys,
to bring it up.
You all literally heard it here first because I heard it here first.
we should write a Yo, Is This Racist book.
Okay.
All right.
I have paper.
Tweet us at Yo, Is This Racist or Trondi Newman or Andrew T. Mm-hmm. And tell us what we should write our book about.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't want to write a book about anything else. So that's my book as far as I know.
I guess I would write a book just about like the DIY projects I shouldn't have attempted.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of things that I'm like, nope, should have called a profesh.
Ooh, y'all, you got to see this compound. Everyone come out to the compound. If you find it, rescue me.
He's fine. I made a stew.
Call in. Oh, the stew is so good. 323-389-7223. That's 323-389-RACE. I don't know.
I've
slept so far. I don't even know if we're still recording, but I hope we are.
I hope this worked.
That's it. Peace.
Bye.